was my next question. Was it as the Bible tells, that Adam was the first human and Eve was created from his ribs? There is no similarity whatsoever between what your Bible says and the original, ancient truth, answered the voice of Zar. You will experience the truth eventually, you little spark of energy in the great light. We are with you now, as we were then. Suddenly I felt myself pulled out of the light, where I had been floating around for so long, and I was led into another, softer light. A large and indescribably beautiful shape was talking, and the words were echoing in me like a booming trombone. I felt a reverence on the verge of sacred worship. I just wanted to float into this tremendous being of love. I have created the angels in beauty and harmony, explained the Divine One. They are the most beautiful ones I know. Because I love them so highly and they are images of my power, I want to create the inhabitants of the planets to be their equals. There are already planets where species live who have come into existence through development. They have no souls, but are very technically gifted. Now I want to give the soul a dwelling that is worthy of all the love, beauty, and joy it contains, and therefore I say, let there be man. The gigantic accumulation of energies which, like magnets, had been pulled to the enormous, radiating shape of the Creator, all quaked when a wonderful tone accompanied his words and burst into something that I could liken to giant fireworks. These fireworks were firing in the middle of the strong cosmic light. From this sparkling, flashing, fantastic light, characters came swimming, floating, and gliding. At first I felt like a spectator, but then I felt myself growing. I looked down at my body. I had been given a body. It wasn't yet distinct and dense, but it had a head, arms, and legs like the other beings that crowded around me. We were surrounded by lovely angels who were singing and dancing and spreading their wings around us. Next to me, both my teachers floated. They were also a little diffuse, but fully recognizable. They took my hands, and in the twinkling of an eye, in a fraction of a second, we were transferred from the sunny energy waves of this indeterminable existence to a ground made of soil and clay, of foaming waves in a clear blue sea and rustling in lofty treetops. Zio and the migration to Earth. The angels stayed with us for some time in order to show us the way about. We had come to the planet of the Indians, the magic, beautiful, wind-swept Zio that was one of the first inhabited planets in our solar system. It was not time for Earth yet. I was not born from a mother's womb, I was born from the energy fusions of the light, and so it was for all of us. We were thin, light beings who suddenly had been placed on a physical ground, even if Zio's ground did not possess our Earth's degree of density. Before I was planted on Zio, our Earth was partly a glowing mass that floated in outer space together with other globes. There were no square or elliptical planets. The globe, that is, the circle, was the sign of the eternal origin. We looked at each other. We observed each other. We were yin and yang. We observed the angels. We listened and learned. We were also beautiful. Our hair, that in the beginning had been fair and almost without color, darkened more and more in those early days on Zio. Our features were no longer identical. Our looks were as different as the streaming waters of the turbulent rapids in our new forests. When we got as far as building houses, digging in the light soil and piling up the shimmering stones on top of each other, our appearances were more and more characterized by different traits. It became apparent that in our consciousnesses were many different talents and gifts. One was artistic, another was musical, and a third was a gifted craftsman. The angels showed us how to build, how the women could weave and sew, how we could use the wild animals and tame them to be domestic animals. There existed no evil, no quarrel about our daily bread, which became all the more substantial. On the other hand, there was a lot of love, joy, and fellowship. All the time we remembered the Great Spirit, and the angels reminded us if we forgot. But yet I wasn't Jan, the poet and the joker standing at the gate to the ethereal world telling stories to his earthly friends. If you hear somebody say, Jan has gone up many steps and traveled across many levels, then it's wrong. There are no steps and no levels here, only an infinite oneness of different realms and sections. Study the cosmic map at the beginning of this book, dear readers. In the middle is the infinite spirit who floats above everything in order to supervise his creation. Don't pile it on too much, Sharla butted in on me. You were telling us about Zio? What happened there? Did you become completely physical? Yes, I answered, but it took time, even though time did not exist there either. We lived in a kind of frequency beyond all computation of time. I know that you and Zar belonged to the angels who helped us. But we did not create any religion from the knowledge we received. We were true to the Great Spirit and his laws of love. The glowing mass that remained on Zio was covered with mountains and soil, and the planet grew more and more physical. Our thin bodies, which until now had worked to create a habitable planet, became, as I mentioned, more compact and more visible. We became something to grab, that could create and form with body and soul in harmony, to laugh, to smile, and to cry, but only with joy, because sorrow was not yet invented. When we were standing one day on the luscious green grass, with the wind rustling trees growing up around us offering us lovely fruits, we felt like dancing and singing. The interaction with the beings of nature was important on Zio. Every tree, every flower, the high mountain, and the singing rapids all had their devas, and we all talked the same language. We constantly communicated with them, exchanged confidences, and helped each other in every way. We were proud of our descent from the Great Spirit. He was our one true ruler. We revered the dual flame of life, and in spite of our spreading across the great planet, our rituals resembled each other. We were dependent on the sun, which for us was holy, as was the moon. We had sun and moon dances, star festivities, and the celebration days of the Great Spirit. Death was unknown to us. Each life lasted about 1,000 years, and then we went through a reviving process and started all over again. We were created from a living energy, and therefore we were in contact with all other living energies in the entire cosmos. Why do I call us Indians? It's because I want to make it easier for the reader to understand our origin, because it extends all the way to the Native American tribes of today. The expression Indian is totally incorrect, as you probably know. It was created by Columbus when he landed in the 15th century on the coast of America and presumed he had arrived in India. Our real name is the People of the Sun and the Stars, and the Native Americans of today call us Muluwetam, the First People. We lived in symbiosis with the whole cosmos until the big catastrophe happened. A meteorite was on its way straight towards Zio. We were situated in the middle of our galaxy. When this happened, Earth was at about the same physical level as Zio, but it had no human inhabitants. The damage to Zio was unavoidable. The meteorite struck with a terrible force on one side of our unfortunate planet. We had calculated the approximate impact point and we had evacuated half our planet. Already at that time there were what you call UFOs, and we got messages from the Great Spirit that those who were evacuated would go further on and inhabit planet Earth. I was one of those refugees. Zio was badly hurt. Due to the awful thrust, the planet was sent so many light years away that it landed on the outskirts of our galaxy. There it still remains and, according to the messages we received from there, it has regained most of its former appearance, except for a gigantic sea that was formed where the meteorite struck. So, we emigrants landed on Earth. Flora and fauna spread their pristine abundance among mountains and waters. In those days, Earth had more water and fewer high mountains than Zio. One animal species was so human-like that it was walking upright and had developed arms with hands that could grip. The intelligence of these animals was limited, but they lived an unobtrusive life in an environment that most closely resembled the rainforests of our time. We, who were created in the image of angels, became the first human inhabitants on Earth. We tried to live as we had been taught on our own planet, and we spent a long time on construction in great fellowship. But our new life wasn't completely without problems. Many of our young women were abducted by the human-like apes. Children were born and they were the mixture that became the basis of present-time humanity. We tried to make friends with them, but soon jealousy and envy arose within this hybrid race and their hatred was directed against us. Suddenly death became a fact that we couldn't ignore. The lives of the ape humans did not even last 100 years. We couldn't understand that. We isolated ourselves from them and built embankments to prevent them from encroaching on our ground. With that, ownership and hostility were established on Earth. We who had been living protected in our own immortality and with our strong laws of love, we became weak and vulnerable. The new way of thinking brought illness and death. The lifespan diminished. The incarnation cycle changed to its present state, a life of approximately 100 years, and periods of living in other worlds between lives. In this way, the worlds and realms outside the ethereal world on the cosmic map were formed. Like that, humans started to become humans. 4. The Lost Millennium Kingdom. It was almost terrible for the observing Gen Self to get a higher awareness of what had happened to me from the time of the birth of Earth, and even further back. Still it felt like I had a piece of soil from Earth in my pocket, and my astonishment before the experiences at the Angels School was almost mixed with a feeling of fear. I had learned so many new things, and not all of them were positive. Such news was that planets in other galaxies had developed a kind of strange gods. They were highly evolved beings with knowledge far beyond the human level. They had the ability to create, and they created. Their work wasn't malicious, but they controlled energies between the planets that opened new paths for humans. On one of the stars of Orion was a power-hungry ruler called Gododa. He dreamed of conquering Earth, and therefore he traveled to our planet in order to subdue the tribes living there. He wanted to be looked upon as a god, and he succeeded by frightening the humans to worship. In his wake followed all the minor deities, who actually were the lords of various phenomena. For long periods of time the good god who we call the Great Spirit was neglected, because Gododa promised power and glory to those who followed him. That was not the way of the Great Spirit. He talked to the hearts of humans and gave them free will. Unconsciously free will was imprisoned in Gododa's power, and humans were led in the wrong direction from the beginning. Gododa divided the humans into different religions, for instance the Nordic as a faith, the Greek and Egyptian belief in gods, Judaism, etc., so that the Great Spirit would lose his foothold. But he didn't. He waited and bided his time and sent down one of his highest angels to Earth in order to teach humans how to live according to the laws of love. Gododa's minor deities, for instance the Nordic, the Greek, and the Egyptian ones, became ambassadors in Islam, in Buddhism, and in Mohammedanism. There are gods in cultures all over the globe, but the one, infinite spirit has been abused under the name of God. In the name of God, brother is baited against brother, and father against son. In the name of God, the worst crimes are committed, where hatred and violence walk hand in hand with war and prophets of all kinds. I have read many books about creation in my earthly life. Even more of them have probably been released since then. Books on creation flood the market, and all of them say different things and use different terms. While I was pondering this, Tsar intervened in my thoughts. "Stop it, my friend," he warned me in a friendly way. "All the books you are talking about are true in their own way. By everything being a unity, and everything being part of this unity both from a cosmic and a planetary point of view, then everything is positive. Every truth is valid as a truth if it originates from an honest, wise, and loving heart." "But how will you be able to understand, then?" I protested. "What a mess it becomes if you accept everything. Where does Gododa come into this unity?" "You must take in what your heart tells you is right. Keep in mind that the knowledge you acquire in the angelic realm is dancing a line dance in the cosmos, and that this dance includes both gods and humans, now and then and later on. Each has its place, its task, but only a few will succeed in striking your heart with Cupid's arrow. Everything is so new to me, but I believe you." That is why Sharla and I are at your side. What has been shown to you in images and in experiences is our version of the creation, as we and you have experienced it. Other consciousnesses will perhaps feel everything in a different way, and then they will come up with another story. An opal contains many colors. For one person it appears to be mostly blue, another person only sees the rose-colored tinges, and a third one claims that the stone is green. There are so many variants of the same thing. Don't get hung up on the little things, always try to see the wholeness. The details are everywhere, but they don't form a wholeness until they are put together. For you, millions of years were a very varying sea of perceptions, light and sound experiences. Now, continue with your memories from the first time on Earth. I remember that we lived in villages where we had a mother and a father who showed us the way about. They kept their ethereal form longer than the rest of us. We were allowed to keep our thousand-year-long lives as long as we did not fall victim to the human apes or did not catch any of the diseases that nowadays are regarded as human qualities: hatred, envy, jealousy, greed, lust for power, etc. The innermost groups of the people of the sun and the stars had to meet secretly in sacred places that were hidden in caves or underground. We could never be sure that the ape people or wild animals would not attack us, but it was easy to handle the wild animals than the wild human beasts. Some of the original sacred places where our groups assembled still remain today. They are located in Canada, New Mexico, Peru, the Andes, the Himalayas, the North Pole, and the South Pole. Even if sea and land areas have moved and totally changed their position, these places apply approximately. We have left memories behind that humans still haven't managed to interpret. More discoveries will be made in the future. When a human had reached the limit of 1,000 years, he or she had to go through a ritual before the refreshment. If the person could pass the tests that were imposed, they would continue into the next 1,000-year period. More and more of us failed. We called them emigrants. I never thought I would be one of them, not until my fall was a fact. The eternal female has always captivated me, captured me, and led me into a butterfly dance that sometimes ended badly. Perhaps the boy Jan had begun to awaken in me even in those days, because one day, when I was walking in the countryside near my home, I caught sight of a human girl with long, golden hair. I realized she was a daughter of the ape people's mixtures. She was very beauteous, sitting near the brook, washing her feet. When I passed very near her, she playfully splashed some water on me. The whole thing ended badly. Did she seduce me or I her? I hardly had time to think before she disappeared like a flash without telling me her name. I got a bad conscience and never told anybody about it. I pushed it down in my subconscious mind as if it never had happened. I loved my sunny family at home, the whole group of loving humans who carried the same ancient wisdom as I did. Sometime afterwards, a few months, maybe a couple of years, I met the girl with the golden hair again at the same brook in the same forest. Again I was driven towards her by a consuming fire, and once more she awakened my young male power in something between lovemaking and fighting. I tried to get rid of this raging hot current that flowed into me at the sight of her half-naked body. The current became a sea of love agony, hotter than all conceptions of hell, filled by an insatiable hunger, an obsessed current that, like the lava from a volcanic eruption, was rolling down the warning slopes of my senses. When the fire slowly cooled down and we were lying on the grass in each other's arms, she suddenly loosened herself and disappeared like the last time. But after a short while she returned with a small child, a white-skinned boy with rosy cheeks and eyes of small blue seas. My son, I thought. My son with this wonderfully wild woman of the primeval forest? Before I had time to calm down, the whole picture vanished and I slowly floated in towards the temple where we performed the 1,000-year ritual. There my judgment awaited me. You did not pass your test, I was told. Why did you make the same mistake again? Somewhere in the wasteland beyond our forests, the woman with the golden hair now lives together with the son she bore you. You must find them. You may not remain in our group. You will not be 1,000 years old. You are vulnerable, and your life can never last longer than 100 years. In most cases, Earth humans die much earlier than that for various reasons, but that will be your experience. Remember, my son, that we love you very much, but you have to leave us. One day you will meet us again in another light world, and then you may choose for yourself what you want to do with your eternal life. Until then, farewell. Lucifer created a new world for himself when he was rejected. Now it was my turn. But my world was not evil, only filled with strong earthly feelings. The wild fever of sexuality and the cold graves of disappointment and self-contempt. I set off walking and tried to bring forth the happy, careless fellow, the clown and joy bringer within myself. But underneath jokes and laughter, which became more and more coarse in the world of the earth humans, was the sad and lonely wanderer. My walk was alone and adventurous. The memory of the other world here on earth hurt for a long time. I searched for the truth. I searched for the golden hair and the blue-eyed child. When I finally, after many years of searching, found them, she was living together with an ape-man. She had given birth to several children, and my son was no longer among them. I wanted to go on looking for the boy, but the ape-man killed me. He represented evil and jealousy, that is the Godonda power. That was my first death, before all the other thousands of deaths. I lost the Millennium Kingdom and had to wait until the present century to get back my immortality in a time that does not exist. Upon returning to the Angels' School where I acquired all this knowledge about my fall, I admit that it was a shock to find out that I had failed at such an early stage of my own heavenly play. The Tale of Tadja. I wandered through many kingdoms, some of them dark, some of them light, but in most of them the inhabitants lived a calm and strenuous life, with a chief or a ruler leading them. These kingdoms were eventually called tribes. As you wander about aimlessly, you get to listen to many strange stories. There are various tales of the flood, not only about old Noah or the Gilgamesh epic of the Sumerians, but many others, which I believe prove that great floods really have occurred during several epochs of Earth's history. I was particularly attached to one of these legends, that mostly is about a woman, for a change. It is a beautiful and sad tale that shows the triumph of the male self-esteem, and into the bargain a very dishonest triumph. When this tale begins, the people of the sun and the stars had already established their kingdoms on Earth, many thousands of years ago. The big disruption had started. Humans had gone too far in their desire for power and envy, which led them further on the path of evil and crime. The fight for power was at its worst in a kingdom that was surrounded by the sea but which covered a vast area. In this kingdom lived a woman called Tadja, with her husband and three children, two sons and one daughter. Tadja was a lineal descendant of the goddess Helios family, see chapter 16. And her knowledge of the potentialities of the inner world was entitled to respect. The inhabitants of this kingdom regarded her as a very wise woman. Her husband, Menda, was not as gifted as she was. He worked with the soil, which was fertile and yielded rich harvests. Their two sons, Jap and Sojn, helped their father, but they also willingly listened to wise advice from their mother. From the time the boys and their little sister Ilva were born, they got to listen to their mother's remarkable stories every evening. The father, however, dismissed these stories as women's gossip, but they consisted of legends where courage, strength, and love always led to the right paths and where evil lurked and had to be chased away. One day civil war came to the country. The inhabitants turned against each other, they told tales about each other, and made fowls of no feathers. Their hatred and envy resulted in mutual informing and reporting of closely related persons and a whole succession of murders and executions. Tadja and her family lived on the coast. One day she got an inner message telling her that the hour of reckoning was near for her people. The inner voice commanded her to build a house with a floatable base, a kind of houseboat. She informed her husband of this message, but he just laughed and called her a crazy woman. However, Judges' sons had heard what she said to their father. They were strong and clever teenagers, both of them. Ilva was only 10 years old, but all three of them helped their mother build the boat. It took them several months. Menda scoffed at them and made fun of the houseboat. He assured them that if they launched the houseboat it would immediately sink. Ilva and Tija brought the timber, and the boys did the carpentry and hammering. When the boat was standing already, the inhabitants of the village came to see it and laughed scornfully at it. But Tija remained silent, because she had been told that the boat must be launched the following morning. Then their adventurous voyage would begin. The inner voice commanded her to collect a male and female animal of as many kinds as she could find, and bring them aboard the houseboat. Her children helped her as always, while her husband and the villagers carried on scoffing at them. Some of the spectators tried to board the boat for a prank, but as soon as they came near it, it was as if an invisible wall prevented them. They began to mutter about sorcery and evil powers, but it did not help. What was meant to come aboard came aboard, nothing else. Menda fled into their old house when he noticed the envy and repugnance that the villagers showed towards his family. There he was safe, because nothing worked against either their house or the houseboat, neither fire nor steel. At last the villagers slouched away, but they threatened to return the next morning. The next morning at dawn, the whole family except Menda boarded the houseboat. He refused to follow them on such a mad ride. Tija's heart ached when she saw his lonely figure on the beach, while the houseboat floated on the waves as if it was created for them. She asked her inner counselor if she was allowed to return to fetch her husband. The answer was yes, but it came with a serious warning. Her husband's heart was not pure enough to follow her destiny. If she acted out of love, the counselor couldn't refuse her this, but the consequences could be completely different than what was predetermined. Tija loved her sullen, ignorant husband and she asked her sons to turn back. They did so reluctantly, but Ilva cried and yelled, "Mother, this will bring us bad luck. Don't turn back." But the boat turned back and fetched Menda. He was taken aboard against his will, shouting and kicking. At last he gave in to his wife's earnest entreaties and declarations of love and he sat down sullenly at the helm. Barely was Menda aboard when the surge appeared. And it was not just any surge, it was a wave that covered the whole horizon and that crossed the country at a furious speed and drowned the whole kingdom with its enormous force. Tija's houseboat cleaved right through the wave and out on the other side. There the boat rested quietly and peacefully and made itself comfortable on the mirror-like water. Tija knelt and deeply thanked the good power that had saved the lives of her family. Meanwhile, as all this happened, Menda fell asleep. Tija carefully loosened his grip on the helm and took over. Her inner voice showed her the right direction. She steered straight into the rosy arms of the sunset. Everybody on the houseboat fell asleep. When they woke up, the houseboat was floating peacefully in a shallow ripple near to a bright strip of land. Lots of humans were standing on the beach, waving their hands. To her surprise, Tija saw that they were the same skin color as her, the reddish color warmed by the sun. Her husband was as pale as the moon, but the skin colors had been very mixed in their former kingdom. The humans on the beach honored them with flowers and aromatic twigs of an unknown herb. Apparently, they were expected. Tija let out all the animals from the lower part of the houseboat. They attracted an enormous attention on the beach. The people knelt and banged their heads in the sand and sang and laughed. Tija realized that she and her family were mistaken for gods, not least of all because of the unusual animals. These people obviously did not know any of the species that had been living in the family's former kingdom. And soon it was obvious that Tija's husband, Menda, was honored as a strange high god, perhaps because of his pale skin color. The family soon realized that they had landed in a place where the people were loving and benevolent, with an ancient culture, but without a leader. When the houseboat arrived, the leader of the people had just died, and there was no successor to him. Menda was mistaken for a gift from the gods to the people. He was put on a flowery throne, and his newly appointed subjects fussed over him and fulfilled all his wishes. Tija and the children were also met with much respect and friendliness, but it couldn't be denied that Mende was the principal figure, and that suited him.